What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL, joined as always by my co-host, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
It is a beautiful day today. Glad to be here talking Falcons football. Just want to say, thank you to my beautiful wife, Emma. She allows me to do this every single week. And keeping her company is her friend Marie Bucata. And so I just want to give her a shout out because she asked for one. So
there you go. Without the support of our wives, you couldn't do it, right? Like I couldn't absolutely do it. You couldn't do it. Like we enjoy the fact that all the folks pop in the chat, but if that old saying, happy wife, happy life, and it's true to an extent. Like if we got on their nerves doing this stuff, then it wouldn't be long lived. But we got a handful of things to get into and talk about tonight. So unlike last time where I missed the intro, this time I shall not miss the intro. And let's just get into it. Now, as the title says, the Atlanta Falcons have created a mess, and now we have to hear about it. I find this interesting. Hold up, hold tight before I get too much into this. What's up, Fred? Happy birthday, sir.
Happy birthday. And just for that, even though no money.
That's all right. Hey, yeah.
Happy birthday, Mr. Butts.
And yes, Nick, y'all will have to forgive me. I decided yesterday that I had nothing else to do, and I might as well come down with a sore throat. So now y'all get to hear the beautiful raspy tones of sick JR, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, so back to our beloved team. We have spent the past 2 years being basically berated for not having a QB. Whether it was from you should have drafted Justin Fields or who, by the way, right now is being talked about being put on like kick return and punt return duties. So Take that for what it is. So we get berated for not drafting Justin Fields and taking Kyle Pitts instead. And then, we get berated for treating Matt Ryan. The team gets berated for treating Matt Ryan the way they did, so to speak, and shipping him off to Indy for just a third round pick and all this, crap. And then you get into the Lamar Jackson. To come out so quickly and say that y'all weren't even going to go after Lamar Jackson. Like we got drug over the coals for that.
Yep.
And then you get into this offseason and I'm already getting tired of the conversation, so to speak, but it feels like it just won't go away. You go out and you get the bell of the ball for the second season in a row, mind you. Last year you got Jesse Bates in free agency. This year you get Kirk Cousins, right? You get the bell of the ball, the best quarterback on the market. You get him to come to Atlanta. Like we have been over it ad nauseum now, how the contract is structured. Kurt himself, regardless of whether I think like there is a human side of it, obviously, but he's also a long NFL vet, a long-standing NFL vet. He knows how these things go. He knows that contracts are only as long as guaranteed monies are.
Yep.
Like he himself, who has gotten more guaranteed contracts than anybody else in football, like more fully guaranteed contracts, knows this. He knows that the length of the contract is what is the guaranteed money. Okay. Yep. We add other years so that we can spread cap things around and do things like that to make it easier. Right. So they go into the draft. We obviously know they pick Michael Penix at 8. And now the team that has been berated for the past 2 years for not having enough at quarterback.
Yep.
Now is being drug over the coals because they got too much at quarterback.
I mean, Rich Eisen was almost in tears with how we have treated the saintly Kirk Cousins, apparently. It's almost like, look, okay, if if you, hell, I would even say the same thing if we had a couple of years ago or a few years back, if we had been the ones that got Tom Brady, right? Even if you, because you know that if you're getting Tom Brady at what, 39, 40 years old when you signed him, you know, yes, Tom Brady is going to play another couple of years. At most, he was going to play two, maybe three more years at most. Okay. I don't care what kind of shape he keeps himself in. He's not playing past that. So even in that scenario, I would begrudge anybody getting, you know, drafting a quarterback wherever they wanted to draft him as a backup, you know, a succession plan to that. But I could even see, I could maybe understand if you were talking about Tom Brady, one of the greatest quarterbacks that has ever played the game. I could maybe see it. We're talking about Kirk Cousins.
Right.
And I think Kirk Cousins is a phenomenal quarterback. I think Kirk Cousins is going to be a good quarterback for us.
Compared to what we've had, like everybody comes up to me, like people who at work who know me, like obviously know that I'm a huge Falcons fan. Like they obviously know that, right? You can't, like the analogy I always use is you in your life have never had to ask a vegan if they're vegan because they'll tell you, right? Yeah. And what I mean by that is like, when you're passionate about something and you enjoy something, you tend to talk about it, right?
Yep.
Tend to bring it up. Hence, we're doing this. So everybody comes up to me. I'm like, oh, man, what do you think about the pick? What do you think about the pick? I got no problem with the pick. Like, oh, what about with Cousins or whatever? Okay, my biggest issue with Cousins, and I think I've said it here on the show more than once, was the fact that in 2 or 3 years, you're going to have to do this again. You're going to be in the QB hunt again. That was my biggest issue. Also, like you want to add into the fact that, you know, historically Kirk Cousins tends to like shrink in primetime games and shrink in the big spotlight games. You know, that was the biggest thing. He couldn't win in prime time. He couldn't win at night, you know, couldn't win when all the eyes were on him. And so there were negatives to be had about Kirk Cousins. Like you said, he's not Tom Brady. Okay. Is he marketably better than anything we've had for the past 2 years? Yes.
Absolutely.
It's in bounds. Are we going to go from the, you know, a team that has been relying on defense to win you games and a run game to above average, you know, QB play like overnight automatically, you know? And so, to that point, what is the, like, why are people still griping? Like I got it the night of, like, I'll full on say it. I mean, I was slightly flabbergasted, you know, sitting here. Y'all can go back and watch the tape. You know, me and you kind of like shouted at each other a little bit that night.
Yep.
You know, as me and you are wont to do every now and again. We ain't been friends this long without shouting at each other.
Yeah. But
the more you stop and think about it, the more it's like, okay, is it the best move in the world? Time will tell, but time will tell with any move.
Yeah.
Like right now, the headlines, in my opinion, if you want to rag on somebody, if you want to drag somebody through the coals, should be like Rashee Rice, who continues to like absolutely F up.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a warrant out, I think, now for his arrest for, or at least wants to be talked to by the Dallas PD for an assault in a club coming 2 weeks or so after having that high speed wreck on the interstate in Kansas City. So like that's what the NFL media should be talking about. If you want to drag somebody over the coals for quarterback decisions, how about Denver Broncos with Sean Payton and Russell Wilson? And then drafting Bo Nix at 12.
Yeah.
Like the pick of Bo Nix at 12 does nothing but validate Penix at 8 to me. Because if you're willing to take Bo Nix at 12, that validates all the other rumors that Penix wasn't going to make it past 13. And whether you think that they got scared or whatever, that they pivoted on their strategy of, you know, it might be easier to come back up for Latu versus taking Latu at 8.
Yeah.
Like, because you can't tell me that they didn't want to walk into that press conference Thursday night with Penix and Latu.
If they had done that, then, like, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Nobody would have cared. Nobody would have cared. And so, I'm with David. David Breland says they just don't like the Falcons. That's what it starts to feel like, right?
Yeah, well, and I mentioned this before the show. Like, to me, what this feels like, or what it feels like to me is like, or what the surprising thing to me is, they won't talk about us in just about any other aspect. We're not relevant to talk about in any other aspect, except for everybody wants to just be able to criticize the moves we make at QB. And look, I'm not saying we're above criticism for the last 2 years and how that's been handled, or even for this pick. Like, I'm totally down. Somebody wants to question the pick. I have no problems with that. If somebody didn't like the pick, if they think they should have gone a different route, I've already been on record on this show saying if I had been involved in the draft, I probably don't take Penix. Now, would I have regretted that a couple seasons down the line? Possibly. But at the same time, like, if I get Kirk Cousins, I want, and just as a fan, and that colors that, right? As a fan, I want that badass fire breather off the edge. And right. I thought Latu was that guy. Okay, that's who I thought was the guy. I would have picked him. So I'm not, you know, don't come to me and be like, you know, it's just you like it because that's the way you would have gone. No, I would have gone different.
Oh, yeah.
However,
I'd have taken Turner.
Hey. But at the same time, at the end of the day, it just feels like they don't care unless they feel like we screwed up. And then they're like, oh, this is free, clicks for the rest of the summer in the dead period of the NFL. Because that's right. All you ever hear about at that point.
Exactly. And that's why
even 2 years down the road, we still hear about the Lamar Jackson stuff when that was total BS. Yep. That anybody included, whether it was us or anybody else, had a shot at Lamar Jackson. Nobody did.
100%.
And they still want to bring it up. And it's just,
Fred Butts with $5. We appreciate you greatly. Fans are never happy. It's fire Rich. Now it's fire Fontenot. And I'm tired of Kirk crying. Kirk ain't even started crying. Like, only thing you've heard as far as Kirk is like his agent, and his agent's supposed to be like wholly 100% on his side, so to speak. So yeah. Kirk's fine. He'll be a professional. I can promise.
Look, I don't even have a problem with Kirk coming. Even if he himself were to flat out come out and say, like, I mean, I was shocked.
Right.
You know, I was shocked, like, because the night of this pick, okay, the night of this pick. Now, you didn't hear the agent say anything else about this later on, but from his people, which means from his agent, the night of the pick, what they heard was that Kirk knew from the team that a QB would be in consideration. Yep. They were just surprised that it was at the eighth pick in the draft.
Exactly.
That's it. So he knew they were looking for a QB to either sit under him for a couple of years wherever they were picked. He just figured, like all of us did, I figured the guy you were probably picking was going to be a Spencer Rattler in the third, fourth round, yep. Which I don't think he went in the fourth.
Fifth, I believe. He fell further than a lot of people thought. Fred with another $5 says the media doesn't like it because they know that we're going to be good for a long time. I mean, that's the prevailing thought, right? That's what in your mind, what ends up justifying you doing what you did is that you feel like you're going to be good for the next few years. Chris, our resident Oregon fan, he goes, Bubba Nix is a top 10 player and I'm going to die on that hill. Chris, I appreciate you. If I'll say this, I don't think him and Penix were in a lot of ways closer, different styles. Like, to me, what Penix gives you with deep ball accuracy and stuff like that, I know the numbers speak differently. I'm just talking about what I see on tape. Bo Nix gives you with athleticism. So, but I'm talking about the general consensus. Nobody that I listened to really thought that either Penix nor Bo Nix were going to go in the top. So that was the point I was trying to make. So yeah. I get you. Our buddies, one time for the fans up in there, he says, y'all hit that like button ASAP. Shout out to Pound for Pound.
Absolutely, man.
Glad y'all are in here tonight, guys. Appreciate y'all's support. And then Andrew Botto says, what's up, fellas? How are we feeling now that the draft is over?
I can't wait for the season to start.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. There, like I said, we could talk all day long about how, you know, Penix this or Penix that. But me, myself, I'm kind of done with it in a sense. Like, I'm tired of hearing about it. And I'm tired of, like, talking about it, right? Because at this point, if everything goes the way they want it to go, at worst, for the next 2 years, you got a very high-end backup. Then so be it. There's no guarantee that anybody is going to hit. Whether it's Quinyon Mitchell, whether it's Dallas Turner, Latu, doesn't matter. Like, in 5 years, we'll revisit this. If I'm even still talking about the Falcons in 5 years, like, we'll revisit this and saying, yes, that was an amazing pick because Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot are still here. But if not, we'll be talking about some, well, you know, whatever, that was a wasted first round pick, yada, yada, yada. Right. So, well, that being said, I think it is it's something that we'll talk about in the future. As far as the rest of the draft goes, a week later, I feel really good about where the defensive line is. I think I even saw where, like, PFF had us ranked as, like, the most improved defensive line, which I did kind of find, like, comical in a sense, because both of our sack leaders didn't return. So,
well, as of yet, but.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen rookie numbers, but if was it Braylon Trice, I think, or Dorless, one of them two.
It was Trice.
I think it was Trice. Had an Instagram photo of him at number 48. So,
well, yeah. Maybe not Bud Dupree. Maybe Brubeck Calais Campbell.
Maybe. Who knows? But I'm really excited about what those three defensive linemen that we brought in, you know, could bring to this rotation. I think it's, you know, Aurora is untapped potential. That's the only one I kind of scratch my head on, especially with, like, Johnny Newton being there. Same thing with Cooper DeJean. Yeah. Like, I kind of scratch my head a little bit, but I chalk that up as a traits pick. Like, he had all the traits that they wanted. And if you watch that little 14-minute video that the Falcons put out earlier this afternoon, like, Aurora was ready to play the night he got drafted. Like, that dude was pumped and jacked and ready to go. So Nighthawk brings up a good point. Newton might have had, like, shorter arms. It seems like
length is definitely something, like, that you were hearing a lot that they really, really value.
Right. I mean, I'm surprised there isn't any, like, really good memes about that right now.
And, you know, Andrew, like, you know, you're hoping he's a Grady Jarrett type of player because you're not happy with him at pick 35. I'll be honest. Outside of the Penix pick. Okay. The rest of the draft, the one pick that when I heard his name called out, I was like, ooh, what?
Yeah.
Like,
there's always,
I didn't know. Well, it reminded me of the Bergeron pick last year. Like, that was not a name that I might have looked at the name, but I didn't. It wasn't even a guy that I looked at as potential, a guy we would pick. So when his name got called, I was in the same boat of, like, wait, what?
I think slotting that guy in, him and Dorless both, into that line with Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata, because you got to think about last year, like, especially down the stretch when Grady went out, Onyemata was dinged up, and you were relying on guys like Albert Huggins, and which who wasn't a bad player, and you're also, like, relying on Tekaron Graham, who wasn't, like, fully back from injury himself. Like, you're relying on those guys heavily, and a bunch of, like, Lael London. There's a dude in London with a last name London. But you're relying on those guys to play heavy snaps. Yeah. And those guys are, like, depth rotational pieces at best. So what you're hoping for is that you've just injected your defensive line with some real, like, force.
With some youth, with some youth and some juice.
That's it.
What,
exactly.
That's what you're hoping for. And with Rook, you know, all I want to see from him this year is when he does come in, you know, just chaos. I just want to see I want to see him just cause chaos.
And like, a lot of those guys, something that when you watch the tape, you should notice and should give you kind of an idea of what they want to try to do on this D line. A lot of those guys, Braylon Trice, Brandon Dorlus, Rook Arora, are really like they're good at this like stunt twist game. You know, they're good at like that wrapping around and coming through those holes. So you could get a real idea of what we're going to try to do defensively in this 3-4 front. You know, they're putting now, I'll say this, they're putting a lot of faith in what Arnold Ebiketie is going to do, you know, as far as going back to that, that 3-4 front, having him, you know, stand up, in a 2-point stance more than likely. So they're expecting a lot out of him. And I wonder if they're, at least in a rotational sense, I'd be interested to see if we'd start to see D'Angelo Malone get back into a rotation. Because he seemed like a forgotten guy last year. So it'll be his third year in the league as well. So,
well, if it, the you know, we'll see, does he actually, you know, put more effort into practice? Because I think that's what we came to believe last year was that, you know, guys maybe super talented, but he just doesn't like put it, he doesn't put the effort in on the practice field. So they weren't, he wasn't going to make the, you know, be on the field one game day.
Right. Well, we'll see what, and then, you know, Andrew brings up, what do you guys think of that linebacker we drafted from Notre Dame in the fifth round? JT Bertrand. No, it's not Bertrand.
Bertrand.
He says, whatever his last name is. I think he's going to like start out. He's going to be, you know, special teams demon. But I think he has the smarts and the athleticism to add, you know, depth to that room, especially with Troy Anderson coming off of that pectoral injury and him coming back from that. I think this gives that room some much needed depth. Cause like Landman was a diamond in the rough. He was definitely, you weren't expecting that out of Landman. Right. So I don't know if it's because it's a new regime, coaching staff wise, does like, who has the upper hand? Is it Landman? Is it, Anderson? Or now is it their guy, Bertrand? Like, I think Caden Ellis was obviously a, Ryan Nielsen guy, but I think he gives you enough and showed enough to where, with Dave Huxtable still being here, with Jerry Gray still being here from last year, that they'll vouch for him enough as far as linebacker stuff goes. So I'll be interested to see how the rest of that linebacker room fills out.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I've watched a little bit, but I'll say this, like, I'm pretty sure Damski is a guy that, like when it comes to when he starts talking about defensive guys, especially, like I like his word on it. I feel like I could trust him, and he seems like he likes this guy a lot. So I'm told, you know, like from what I've seen, this guy is like he can go. He's not like the ultra burner at linebacker, but he still can go sideline to sideline. He's got really good instincts. He's a really good tackler. And he just seems like he has a good feel for where, you know, where he needs to be and is in the right place at the right time, more times than not.
Right.
So like he seemed, you know, the guy led his team in tackles for what, 3 seasons.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's not, you know, a small college. You know, so he's going up against like, you know, legit college talent, and he's still coming away with team leading tackles every single season, you know, for 3 seasons. then there's something there. There has to be something there.
Right. I completely agree. Millie Mills says, P for P, what's up? What's going on, Millie?
What up, Millie?
Same thing with Bradley Burnett. He says,
by the way, Millie, I appreciate, even if you only showed up for just a little bit, I appreciate you showing up on Saturday.
There you go. Bradley Burnett says, hello. Howdy, everyone. What's going on, Bradley? Same thing with Carrie. Says, Falcon fans, hope everyone is doing well. Yeah, hope everybody is doing
great.
Well. I missed this earlier, but Wavy 2X brought up a good point. Says, I can't wait until we're able to see Penix in the preseason game. It's definitely going to make preseason fun. Like,
yes,
I go to those games anyway, as many of them as I can, just because, like, I mean, they're cheap tickets. So, but yeah, it is going to be fun to, you know, when the backups do start coming in. Now, Mike O has an interesting point. He goes, I'm not sold yet on Lake, and I'm assuming you're talking about Jimmy Lake. He says, I'm wondering how much involvement Raheem will have on the defense. I don't know about Raheem. I think Raheem seems more like he wants to be like the CEO kind of deal of the team. But I wonder how much like Jerry Gray and Dave Huxtable, like that brain trust of, you know, Jimmy Lake, Jerry Gray, and Dave Huxtable, because yeah, it is going to be interesting because yes, Jimmy Lake shortly, very briefly, was the head coach of the Washington Huskies. He was their defensive coordinator for a while, and under him, they played very well. But that's college, right? We always talk about like how a coach or like a player's game is going to translate from college to, college to the pros. But the same can be said for a coach, right? Like, is what they're dialing up going to translate? At least, you know, he's used to working with college age kids. And if they are trying to go with more of a youth movement on the defensive side of the ball, it shouldn't be as much of a culture shock in that aspect when, you know, from Jimmy Lake. But I will be interested to see what kind of impact the defense is going to have this year. What are your thoughts on, are you concerned at all about Jimmy Lake?
No. I think you're right in that Raheem is probably going to be more of a CEO, but I do think, he brings in Lake because he's either a guy that he truly trusts him in whatever system he wants to run, or he wants to run a certain system and he, you know, knows that Jimmy Lake will run that system. Or even after they get hired on, they go over like, here's the kind of concepts I like, you know, that I want us to run. And Jimmy Lake is like, all right, cool, we can do that.
Right, right.
Whatever the case may be. So at the end of the day, like, I don't know enough about Jimmy Lake. But at the end of the day, like, I have to trust Raheem that he brought this guy in for a reason.
So it was funny that we got on this subject because this popped up on my timeline a little bit before we went live. Let's see if I can make it a little bit bigger here. Okay, so this is the coverages that the LA Chargers ran last year under Raheem Morris, right? So if Jimmy Lake is going to run his system, then you can expect a lot of cover three and a lot of quarters coverage. Yeah. That was the two main. So for that, you know, that's that heavy influence of, you know, the Tampa 2, you know, which the Tampa 2 defense, if I'm not mistaken, is really just a cover three because you're dropping that middle linebacker into the middle of the field to cover that middle part where you got your two high safeties, you know, so you got, that's where those quarters come in. You got your two high safeties and your two corners. They're covering the quarters. Your cover threes, your two high safeties. Corners are man-to-man, which Jimmy talked about, the corners playing man-to-man. So you got your two high safeties and then you got your middle linebacker in the middle of the field. Somebody, if I misspoke, y'all correct me in the comments. I know y'all will, but, but there you can see what the breakdown really is it's going to be a lot of cover three and it's going to be a lot of quarters coverages. So that's what we should expect to run, which I would not be surprised one bit if we get the addition of Akil Witherspoon or the safety's last name is Johnson. It's
John, I think it's John Johnson or John James Johnson. Johnson?
Yeah, it's a JJ name.
Yeah.
So, so who is that? Okay, I saw somebody on Twitter posted a number. I was like, oh snap, our jersey's finally dropping. But no, that's for the Cardinals. I would imagine that we should start seeing some of that soon because you do have rookie mini camp starting on Friday. Millie's messing with you about your game. He said, oh, okay, old school joint. That's why it looked like that. He said, keep streaming, bro. I'll pop in from time to time. If not on the game myself. Yeah, if y'all missed it, Jonathan popped up with a surprise stream on Saturday playing, what was it, Fallout 97? Is that what you were playing?
Yeah, it was the Fallout, the original Fallout game released in 97. And the main reason why I was, my original thought was either Fallout 4 or Fallout 76 was what I was going to stream. But for you guys on the other end that would be watching it, it was kind of choppy. Right. It wasn't a really good experience. So that I went with the original Fallout, but it was, it's just something that I've wanted to do for a while. I want to see how you guys enjoy, you know, if you guys liked it, or what have you. So, but yeah, I plan to do it again this Saturday if I can, basically just play for a couple of hours. And if anybody wants to drop in and, talk Falcons football while while I'm streaming a game, then that's fine. We can talk about that. We can talk about really whatever you want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the only things that I do not want to talk about in that that stream would be politics, religion. Leave those out of it. We can pretty much talk about anything else you want to talk about.
Yeah, one piece of advice I got from my daddy a long time ago. If you ever wanted to start a fight, tell people your opinion on politics and tell people your opinion on religion. Most people know where I stand on the second part, but I don't, we ain't trying to turn this into a sermon because that ain't what y'all are here for. If y'all are, just hit me up in the DMs and we can chat. Ricky Smith said, what's up, everybody? Just left Aaron Freeman's channel. That guy needs to take a deep breath. Man, we love Aaron. It took me a while. Okay. I have told Aaron this through his face before. He's one of the reasons why I started this and started doing this because he is very much like sarcastic by nature. And his sarcasm tends to trend towards like what most people would say is like a negative slant. But after I've gotten to know him a little bit better and, it's not as serious as he comes off, a lot of the times, but that's just Aaron. But no, that did make me chuckle.
Yeah. I would get super annoyed with him on Twitter, years ago, back when he was still doing the, before he did the podcast that he does now.
He was doing the other one, the Falc Fans.
Yeah. The Falc Fans podcast. And, he was just, I was super annoyed and I blocked him for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But I've come around. He's a butt, and we've obviously had him on the show.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We came on draft night, so.
Oh yeah. And getting to know him, he's a very cool dude, that sometimes has opinions that I don't necessarily agree with.
And that's fine.
Boils down to.
Right. And at that the end of the day. Fine. Yeah. We don't want to live in an echo chamber. Dude. Nick says, try playing Madden.
But man, I'm telling you, it's like anything.
It gets choppy.
That has like fast action of any kind is probably going to be kind of rough. And we can only go up to 720p on the stream. We can't go any higher than that.
Yeah, so, not right now. We can't. Unless we paid for a higher tier, but Fred, I think you're right. I think it does come out on the 12th. Is what I thought I heard. Either that, or I thought I also heard the 9th. As far as the schedule. But that'll be something else that we break down, next week. Next week we'll have we'll have rookie mini camp to talk about and we'll have the, the schedule to take a look at. Let's see. Millie says, JR, Troy at edge. Do you think it can work? I just got a strange feeling. Heem and Lake are going to try that. His size and speed just screams it. I could see them using him as a like blitzing backer. I don't know if I would truly put him on the edge. But they may, like, especially coming back, they may reduce his role. I guess it just depends on how quick he picks up the offense. It might be a deal where, because that's kind of how Caden got on the field for New Orleans before he signed with us, was as more of a blitzing backer. And with the amount of pressures and creepers and stuff like that that Raheem has liked to run in the past, I could see them doing that, throwing him in there and having him rush the passer. But I mean, I myself wouldn't necessarily be against it, but I think one of the bigger issues with Troy is he hasn't been able to focus on one position. Like through his college career, he was, you know, running back, quarterback, defensive end, linebacker, you know. Yeah. And so when he was drafted here, that was one of the things that you were like, okay, this dude's smart. He, you know, can handle a lot of different things. But if we focus him on one thing, will that take his game even higher? You know? And so that's, I think that's one of the thoughts there is allowing him to focus. But it wouldn't shock me. Ricky says, so do y'all actually think we have another easy schedule? Because I don't. I think us in New Orleans are, as far as what is rated, yeah, we have the two easiest schedules.
I've talked about this when it comes to the NFL, because of the parity in the league, mm-hmm, like one year, what looks like a tough schedule could be the easiest schedule. It could, like, I think when you look back at the end of the season, you're like, oh, that was like one of the easiest schedules in the entire league versus, you know, hey, these guys got, you know, the strength schedule is like the, you know, like what the winning percentage is like 0.435 or something like that. And you get look at the end of the season, you got like three or four division winners that you played against, and a bunch of teams that were in the playoffs, and
right,
all this other stuff. So you just never know from year to year. So I don't look at any schedule and be like, oh, that's an easy schedule, that we should make the playoffs with that schedule, because you just never know.
Right, and you're always going to have a like worst to first type situation. But, you know, because, like, I mean, take a look at the Rams last year. It was supposed to be and same thing with the Chiefs. Like, the Chiefs were supposed to be in a rebuilding year and, like, a retooling year, and they go and win the whole thing. The Rams, everybody kind of had counted them out because of the youth movement, and, you know, they go on a good run.
Well, there was some talk about McVay, like, retiring.
Well, yeah,
in that offseason.
Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm kind of with Millie, though. Like, you know, if Kirk could come in here and be Kirk, I'm not worried about no team. We're going to score. Y'all just, you know, keep up, so to speak. And that's the deal, is like, as much as we're making about the Penix deal, if Kirk and Zach Robinson hit the ground running, that's going to have such a beneficial effect on our defense. Me and Jonathan have been like researching for an upcoming video that we're going to do, hopefully this week, maybe. But I was looking at a game last year, trying to, like figure out some things, and the amount of drives that went like four plays punt, three plays punt, interception, fumble, like the amount of times like our offense was just barely on the field. Like, it's no wonder that the defense itself wore down, you know, as the season went on. So I'm really hoping that in and of itself is a positive effect on the team, with, you know, being able to move the ball with our big three, you know, and Robinson, Kyle Pitts, and Drake London. Not only that, and then you're adding in The other pieces, the Ray McLeods, the Darnell Moonies, the
Rondale Moore,
the Washington kid out of Illinois, who looks like could be a real nice pickup as far as like draft diamonds.
He's like a slightly lesser version of Drake, really, like London.
Right, right. So Fred asks, what are y'all looking forward to in training camp? I'm really looking forward to, I know this is going to sound like geeky and nerdy, but I'm really looking forward to like, what is the, like, how different does the offense formationally look? Like, is Zach Robinson, is he going to lean on what his mentor, you know, Sean McVay did? Like, is it going to be a heavy 11 personnel? Like, we talk about Rondale Moore, we talk about Darnell Mooney, we talk about Ray McLeod, but we paid Charlie Warner, we gave him a 3-year contract, you know, to be a more all around tight end.
But I honestly think he's going to be, I think he will be closer to a Lavine Toilolo. I think with maybe even lesser than that when it comes to receptions. I just don't know if he'll get that many chances. But I think he's going to be one of those guys that will be, you know, everybody's focused on everybody else. He kind of gets lost in the wash, and you throw it to him, and there's nobody around him because nobody's paying attention to him. He'll get those kinds of catches from time to time, but I think he's brought in to be a another part of the running game. That's what I think.
Well, here's the deal. Like, Josh Gillum brings up an interesting point, right? He says the Rams ran 11 personnel like 93% of their snaps last year, which I don't know if it was 93. I know it was the most in the league. I thought I saw like 91, but that's splitting hairs. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. Now he says, I think we need another wide receiver because if Drake goes down, we're screwed, in my opinion, which I would agree. Darnell Mooney can he go back to what he was the year he caught 1,000 yards? You know, was that an outlier? But anyway, the reason why I bring this up is because when Sean McVay first got to LA, in his mind, his offense was going to actually look a lot more like Shanahan's. Like, they thought that they were going to live in 12 and 13 personnel. And so, but the personnel that he had, and the fact that guys like Robert Woods and then Cooper Kupp and now Puka Nacua could block like a tight end.
Yeah.
Like, what they do, a lot of things in 11 personnel that act like 12 personnel. You see what I'm saying? Like, even now with the like condensed formations, which with the condensed formations and you're using Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp in a bunch, it allows them to, you know, be able to get to the defender much quicker, and to where the size isn't necessarily like is negated a little bit more. Their angles are a little different. And so the reason why I say all that is because right now, the way our team is constructed this year, you do have more at the tight end position with, you know, Kyle Pitts and then Charlie Warner. So do you use more 12 personnel, but use Kyle Pitts as a, you know, split out wide, or, you know, purely in more route running versus like the inline blocking that we saw more of last year? Still wasn't a lot last year, but you saw more of the traditional inline blocking from Kyle Pitts last year than you had his rookie year. So do we go back to having more of the rookie style Kyle Pitts in the offense, where if that's the case, then are you going to be doing the opposite, which is, if Sean McVay is doing a lot of 12 personnel stuff out of 11, do we do a lot of 11 stuff out of 12? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I think that's probably what you're going to do. You bring in Werner. He's going to be your extra offensive lineman to give you better protection for 3 and 4 man routes with Pitts, Drake, Mooney, or Moore, and then either whether it's Tyler Algier or it's Bijan or Jace, you know, any of those guys that go out into a route right. Somewhere. But I think he comes in and is the sixth offensive lineman to help protect Kirk. So you can still get 4 guys out.
Right. Yep. And well, yeah, like Millie, I get like he goes, basically, I hope all these weapons don't overwhelm D-Rob, which is, I guess, a lot of Falcons fans kind of felt like that last 3 years where you had like Pitts, London, and then Bijan. It almost felt like each year you had to try to focus on justifying those picks by, oh, we're going to run the offense through them instead of creating a cohesive offense. Because that's, I think, what a lot of us felt like, right?
Yeah, I can see why people would think that. But the good thing is that this current regime, outside of Terry Fontenot, right? But Raheem Morris, Jimmy Lake, Zach Robinson, all the, Jimmy Grace, but by and large, like the top of the silos when it comes to the various parts of the actual team, they didn't draft these guys.
No,
they're not their guys. So I don't think they have any kind of a thing where they're like, well, I picked this guy, I have to show why I picked this guy.
Right, right.
And now they're just putting an offense together with weapons that are already there.
I think if there's one major criticism that I had of Arthur Smith is that it did not seem like he could put together, whether it was because of bad QB play or what have you, it did not seem like he was able to put together a cohesive offense with the weapons that he had. Because it seemed like, oh God, we picked up a tight end at 4. Nobody's ever done that. I got to prove why we did that. And then, oh, we picked a wide receiver, and the particular wide receiver we picked, I got to prove why we did that. And then you followed up with, we picked a running back at 8 when you don't pick running backs in the first round. I got to prove why he was such such the right pick. And I think you could easily fall into that trap, especially when you have the media doing their job by, you know, asking those type questions like, okay, you picked this guy. And that's why, in a sense, like, circle back around, I think it is like really bold by this regime and by this coaching staff, by everybody, to do what they did at 8 and like stick to their convictions and, you know, and pick, like, yes, we've talked about like whether their strategy changed, because we've heard that said now that, oh, they were initially going to pick Latu at 8 and then try to come back up for Penix. But after like QB started going off and the information that they were getting, you know, with guys trying to come up, they felt like Penix wasn't going to be there. And they're probably right on that. Yeah. Seeing how the rest of the draft unfolded, they're probably correct that Penix wouldn't have been there. So they felt like they were going to be able to trade back up for Latu. They wanted to walk into that press conference. You can't convince me otherwise. They wanted to walk into that press conference with Michael Penix and Leo Latu. And it just didn't come out that way.
Yeah.
Nobody come off that pick.
It didn't work out the same way that, you know, like you can say what you want to say, but like they have been trying this entire offseason to, like, since free agency started through the draft, they have been trying to do everything they can to get a pass rusher in this building.
Yeah, an alpha pass rusher.
They've been trying to do it. Now it just hasn't worked out. Okay, and sometimes and again, I would much rather it be that we tried and it didn't work out because, for whatever reason, then, how many times have we seen in the past where we really, really tried a couple times, didn't work out. And the next thing you know, we're paying exorbitant prices, like way overpaying somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Come in here to, and then they just end up like not being what we, you know, worth anything close to what we paid for them. So if they have like a certain price in mind and they stick with it, then cool.
For those who were talking about earlier, per Adam Schefter, the schedule will be released the 15th of May, which is next Wednesday. Is that right? Let's see. Yes, next Wednesday.
Yes.
So, kind of quote-unquote breaking news a little bit there. I don't have any sounders for that, so you'll have to. Anyway, but yeah, I heard it. The 15th of May. So we won't be talking about the schedule release. Well, maybe we'll get some leaked stuff by then. Ricky Smith was asking, have we checked out Isaiah Wooden Senior's tape? I have not checked out. Is he one of the undrafted? I'm thinking he's one of the undrafted guys. I haven't dove like too deep into undrafted guys. I tend to wait till like camp to really get into that, which is, you know, maybe something we talk about next week on the draft. I may, or not draft, on the draft, good Lord. On the show, may see how this rookie mini camp goes, see who turns heads there. But let's see. Comments have slowed down quite a bit. Here we go. Millie says, I like the combo of Rook, Dorlus, and Trice to make up for Latu. In this draft, like this was kind of a weird draft, right? Once you got past the first round, like there wasn't like big disparities in like bridges between. There were a handful of guys that I would like to have gotten. Like I think Cooper DeJean would have been fun to add to the secondary. I really would have liked Ladd McConkey. That's just because that was one of my guys. But once you got into the second, third, fourth round, like all those guys seemed like they were talent wise on about the same level. So yes, you didn't come away with a lot to, but I think Braylon Trice was a good value where you got him. Like, I think as far as like getting a pass rusher who I think can be an impact, is he ever going to be like a double digit sack guy? He might give you one or two seasons where he sniffs close, but
Braylon Trice?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you never know. Like, for all we know, that
I mean, he was a high-pressure guy in college. That could translate.
Yeah, I mean, you get him in the right system. You get him in the right, you know, with the right coaches and the right, you know, support around him. you know, those pressures that maybe were eluding him, you know, maybe he gets that extra tick in the NFL.
Right.
You know, and he gets those guys. So
I'll tell you this, like, Dorlus and Trice, I'm excited about.
Super
excited about Dorlus. I think he's a guy who can give you that positional versatility and in a 3-4 front. I think he can line up, you know, as if you put Eddie Goldman in the middle, we're just going to say Goldman survives training camp and makes an impact. You put him or that Zion Loge in the middle as like that big space eater and throw Dorlus and on one edge and Trice, like I could truly envision a front where you have Ebiketie and Trice on the same side and like Dorlus on the other side. And that could be a lot of fun, you know. John H. Is London really a wide receiver one? I think so. Yeah. I think he has shown enough to be a Mike Evans type line, wide receiver. Like, is he DeAndre Hopkins? Is he Julio Jones? Is he always going to run past you like, and absolutely like break you off? No, but you know, is he going to be, like I said, like I could really envision him being like a Mike Evans type guy, you know, from this point on, especially with competent quarterback play. Yeah. I could definitely see him being you know, a guy who you look up in 5 years and he's put together his you know, 5,000 yard receiving season in a row. Because like nobody, when we talk about elite receivers, nobody talks about Mike Evans being one of those, and he definitely is one of those elite guys. And so I definitely feel like London could be in that mold of wide receiver one for us.
Yeah. I mean, and look, if he's not talked about as one of the elite guys until towards the, because now you start to hear Mike Evans' name said.
Right. Right. Yep.
But you didn't hear that just like even a couple of years ago, but in the middle of his crazy, 1,000 yard seasons in a row, or 1,200 yard seasons in a row, or whatever it was. Like he's put up a lot of yards,
dude, and like ridiculous. Like I think he's gone like it's either 9 or 10 seasons of 1,000 yards a season, and like double digit touchdown. Like he is, you know, I hate it that he plays for Tampa Bay, because holy Pete, like he's what you want, you know.
Yep.
He's been durable. He's been, he's been the wet red zone weapon that you wanted. Cause that was like one of the biggest knocks with Julio, right? Is, you know, there was only a few times in his career he actually had double digit touchdowns. So I say a few times, I'm probably wrong with that. I know there was a good 3 or 4 year stretch that we were on touchdown watch for Julio Jones.
Yeah. It was like,
and so
guy would come out, have a great yardage wise season, but have like 6 touchdowns.
Right. And if there's one thing that's probably going to keep him, unfortunately for him, out of the Hall of Fame, it's going to be like that type of production. So let's see. John H. follows it up with, "This show is awesome." Thank you, John. We feel like this show is awesome too.
Yeah, we try to make it awesome. So I'm glad to hear we're at least somewhat successful on that.
There you go. Yeah, look, he says Evan burns AJ and shit. Evans burns a lot of guys. Like he's just that deceptive. Which I think that's what, like, there was somebody, I wish I could find it.
You want to hear something crazy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Julio Jones had double-digit touchdowns exactly one time his entire career.
That's what I was thinking. I thought, okay.
That was 2012. He had 10 touchdowns. So he just made it to double digits. Past that, he's had 66 touchdowns for his career through 2023.
Right. And a lot of it has to do with, the amount of attention paid to him.
Oh yeah.
Especially
he was the guy that would burn you over the top for these long catches, or he would hit you with like the crossing pattern. And he'd run for like 40, 50 yards, but then get caught like 10 yards outside the end zone.
Right.
And then at that point, everybody's on high alert and they're sending
three guys
his direction.
I was about to say, there was that one meme where you had 3 guys bracketing Julio Jones. Like the game plan was like, we ain't going to let Julio Jones beat us. Yeah. Like speaking of like, you know, Drake London, as far as, you know, wide receiver, I'm not going to play the video because I don't want to get absolutely killed, but this guy, Jetpack Galileo, talking about Drake London doing nice work here on vertical push on these in-breaker routes, you know, clean separation. Because, like, the follow-up was, it was, you know, let Drake London cook, you know, because he is a strong guy who can win off the line of scrimmage. And I really do honestly believe that given competent QB play, he's going to turn a lot of heads, I guess is what I'm getting at. That's my thought anyway. He says, I think Rob from Alabama is good. He's talking about the running back from Alabama, Jason McClellan. I think he's a guy, and I hate to say it like this, as much as I love, you know, Tyler Algier, and I love Tyler Algier, and I don't think he's going to go anywhere, but Tyler Algier is going into his third season.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tyler Algier is not going to get re-signed, right? Like we kind of
maybe,
like for the most part, unless it's for like next to nothing. Like, because now he's going to be I think truly in the like shadow of Bijan, which that's something that we're going to talk about. Hopefully this have a video coming out this week about that. But now you're going to get it to a point where your second back, as long as Bijan here, is going to be a steady rotation of fourth, fifth, sixth round guys. And I think that's what Jace McClellan is. He gives you everything you could want in a second, in a RB2. He's good at pass protection. He can catch coming out of the backfield. He's strong running in between tackles. He doesn't have what I would call the absolute talent to be RB1. Especially not when you have a guy like Bijan Robinson on the team. But as the league goes to more and more backs by committee, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that's what he is. He is a back by committee. Let's see. Yep. Avery Williams was listed as a running back under Arthur Smith. It'll be interesting to see if they put him back to corner, which is what he was when he got drafted.
It's just going to be RTR because he's a returner.
And I think that's where he's going to get the most play is in the return game. So I think that it's I think that's where he makes his bones, especially if he comes back healthy, especially with this new kickoff, which is something I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
Millie says, and Drake is fast enough to get behind DB. So yeah, I agree, JR. Kirk just has to be Kirk. That's it. I think that once they get their timing down, I think he's going to be just fine, given the, you know, jump balls, you know, because that's where you saw Drake excel, you know, was those contested catches. And
yep.
And so
he was really good with contested catches. He was, what I'm excited to see is hopefully with, you know, Kirk now, Penix in a, you know, couple years, whatever. But Kirk this year, what I'm excited to see, hopefully, is they figure out ways to scheme guys open. Don't rely on them having to beat their guy every single time. I'm not saying don't have times where, like, okay, you're going to have to beat your guy to win this route. I'm not saying don't ever do that because you have to at some points. But, like, you should be able to scheme guys open to the point where you get a Drake London coming across the middle and get him some, get him a pass that he can catch in stride, try to get him some yak after that. Cause he's a really good, you know, after the catch runner. And I'd love to see him be used more for that. So.
Mm-hmm. No, and I completely agree that it is I would love to see him, especially on those in breaking routes, be able to cut across the middle. I imagine that they're going to probably implement a lot more mesh than what we saw Arthur use.
Which is crazy because when we did see it, it was awesome. And then he'd go whole games without using it. Like,
right. Yep. There were things that definitely left you scratching your head. Like it was a preseason game last year, I think it was, where they had a really awesome innovating way. They did like this mesh and then immediately broke up and it went in for a touchdown. And then you never saw it in the season. There were a handful of examples like that. Let's see. Bobby D. Blassingame. Bobby D. Blassingame. I love that name, dude. That's awesome.
That is a good name.
It says, "There's no mess, fellas." Talking about my title. We're an advantage under a category of success now. Sustainability will be the goal, and we will go get it. That's the point. And, like, yes, the title was a little misleading, but that's kind of what you're supposed to do in these things, right, is, like, try to, you know, grab some attention. But it was more talking about, like, just how the national media right now can't get the Falcons jock out of their mouth. You know what I'm saying? And it's always like, oh, we're only going to talk about the Falcons if it's like some way to smear their face in something. When to me, there's much bigger or not bigger, but much more controversial QB talk that could be had. Could talk about. Go ahead. Yeah,
I'm totally fine with the night, like the when that pick is made, and you hear people that are like, "What is going on?"
Oh yeah,
I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with the next day, like you get the reporting, and people are like, "I still haven't quite wrapped my head around it. I don't understand the pick, this and the other," or even just saying like, "We think it's a bad pick. They should have gone here and done this." Totally fine with that.
Right.
We're talking a week later now.
Yeah, exactly.
Week and a half later now, and you got people that are milking this because it's just like anything else, negativity sells.
Yep.
And just like,
and look, like car crashes or train wrecks and sex. Those two things are going to get you money regardless. Like people can't not look at it. And so that's right now, you know, they have spun the narrative that the Falcons are the train wreck. And I just don't think I don't think they are. I don't see it. Like, I just, because you can't say to me that, even though I was one of the ones that was advocating for an impact player, you can't guarantee me any of those guys picked in the first round or impact. Like, I briefly had thought about, granted, we're glad we didn't do it because I think it actually would have been boring content, but I thought about going through like the last few drafts and be like, all right, like, tell me which one of these guys was amazing, you know, and there have been some, obviously, like a Justin Jefferson. There are a few there, but holy Pete, there's plenty of guys that you're like, oh man, I forgot that dude was even in the league, or yeah, I forgot that dude even got picked, and he got picked in the first round. You know, we could do that kind of stuff all day long. And so I'm not necessarily too terribly concerned about it. I like Bijan Homeboy says two good quarterbacks is better than zero. Now, there's a prevailing thought that if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. But I think that's if you're trying to play two quarterbacks.
Yeah. If you're trying to pull either like a high school or college thing where it's like, this guy comes out and he starts the series, and then like for a play, you know, you pull him out and then you put in this quarterback, and then he plays a couple plays, and then you pull him out, and then, but it's not in a the way the New Orleans does with what's his face,
Taysom Hill. Believe you me, like I don't like. I hope they don't have a package for Penix. No, look, the only way I want to see Penix on the field this year is what Fred Buss is bringing up here. What if Kirk gets hurt? Who looks stupid then? I ain't worried about that aspect of it. But to me, that's the only way I want to see Penix on the field this year, is if Kirk gets hurt. Because if Kirk doesn't get hurt, then I want them to enact their plan. I don't care about the being 27 years old when he finally gets to start. All that's just a number at this point. If you can get 3 years out of Penix, or 3 years out of Kirk, and 10 to 12 years out of Penix, guess what? You just matched the playing length and probably production of Matt Ryan. That's a franchise quarterback, and I am so not mad at that. What I didn't want to do, and what we have just dealt with for the past 2 years, is QB purgatory. And you see what QB purgatory has gotten us: 2 years, 7-10 in a weak NFC South division. Like, we have let Carolina retool with a potentially better head coach that might be able to fix Bryce Young. You have let Tampa Bay potentially find a longer-term solution at QB while still retooling that. You see what I'm saying? Like, you have missed an opportunity these past 2 years to be able to get into the playoffs and make some noise because you took a chance and you missed. The chance that you took was, okay, I think we've seen enough out of Desmond Ridder to let him start. Okay.
I agree with it. I'm not, you know.
Look, I said from word go, I hope one of those guys hit. And I was talking about Mariota or Ridder. I was hoping Mariota could have resurrected his career. or Ritter could have hit, because that would have solved the problem. Neither one of them happened, which is where we're at today. Tony Wright, our good buddy, says, good evening, JR and Jonathan.
Evening.
All right. What's up, Tony? He says, our defense is shaping up to be very good and very deep. I believe Goldman will make the team as the backup nose tackle to David Onyemata. It'll be interesting to see how they deploy Onyemata, if they deploy him at nose tackle. I know he did that from time to time down in New Orleans. So I think we do have now, especially with Zion Loge in the fold, I think you now have some really good depth at nose tackle.
Yeah,
I feel much better about the nose tackle position before better than I did before the draft. So that's something I am looking forward to see how all that goes. Yeah, he's Onyemata, Goldman, and then nose tackle Loge puts us in good shape.
Yeah, you do that, and then you have if Onyemata is your nose tackle, probably starting defensive ends are Grady Jarrett and Zach Harrison or Taquan Graham. Those will be your 3-4 defensive ends.
Yeah,
and then on the outside, you'll have Ebiketie and Trice, but probably I would assume Carter will probably be the starter.
Imagine that Carter is the starter. John had a good question. He says, if you could trade Kirk Cousin and his contract for TJ Watt right now, would you? I don't think so. Like, and as much as I want a fire breather alpha dude coming off the edge, and I want that. We have seen, like, how many Super Bowl rings did TJ Watt have on his hand currently?
Yeah. I mean, like, look.
It's the truth.
For one, TJ Watt has shown a tendency to be injured quite often so far in his NFL career, for one. Two, even when he makes it through an entire season, their defense looks amazing. Their offense looks like crap. And if they don't have that offense to go along with it, then at the end of the day, boom. Now you might say, okay, well, we got Pitt. But I feel much more comfortable starting the season with Kirk Cousins and maybe even the season after this one. Starting those two seasons with Kirk Cousins, assuming everything goes the way that goes according to plan, and at the very least, Kirk Cousins does his job, right?
Right.
As long as he does his job, then the rest will figure itself out, and then start Penix in 2026. Like, if we get to 2026 and then have Penix start, I think we'll be able to reap so much more from this.
I'll throw out a crazy scenario, like Cousins plays well this year. Like, shows you no reason not to trust it and not to keep it. Like, if next year is as bad as they say it is, as far as QB play coming out of the draft, who's to say that you don't trade Penix and recoup multiple first round picks for him, especially if he balls out in the preseason? I'm not saying it's going to happen. Don't call me crazy. It's just, I could see, especially if we lose some picks because of the tampering or whatever, you roll all this stuff together. So, but I don't know. It could be interesting. So, but yeah, it's going to be fun. We got rookie mini camp coming up this weekend. So we should have some fun things to talk about next show. I guess I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping this thing up. I think I hear a battle going on out in my living room that I might need to step up into and be dad in. We'll see.
I don't want to catch any strays.
Look, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But like I said, next week we got the
Rookie minicamp
talk about. And hey, man, Fred's even talking about, hey, maybe somebody gives us a lion's share for Cousins, and maybe he don't want to look over his shoulder. Who knows? I don't care. But you never know what could transpire. Keep your eye on the channel, because we're going to try to have a video out this week or this weekend, possibly. We'll see how it goes. Don't promise anything. But we will be back live next Tuesday.
So Saturday, I'm going to try to, I'll send something out Saturday, if I'm for sure going to do it. But yeah. I will say, going forward, if it's going to happen, it's going to be on Saturdays. If you know, come by, hang out again. You know, talk Falcons, talk NFL, talk MLB. Although
I must say, Millie wants to know if with the NCAA dropping this this summer in July, what team would you be rocking with?
I mean, if I had to pick one team that I'm rocking with, it's going to be the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. I'm a Georgia Tech fan. Have been. I was you know, born being a Georgia Tech fan because my dad was. So
there it is.
I will always be a Georgia Tech fan. I just haven't followed it as closely probably the last decade or so. But I've heard good things about the current coach.
They got a relatively interesting QB. I like watching him play. Last name's King, I believe.
Well, the biggest problem is like just trying to actually watch them.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, watching especially Georgia Tech is, you know, a crapshoot at best. So
right. All right, folks. We appreciate y'all. As always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128, Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi. And come on by Saturday to talk Falcons. Talk college football a little bit. So
there you go. All right, folks. Y'all take care. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.